we go through the verses, we're going to sort of take our time just reading through them and to get a good feel for what's happening here. The book of Ruth takes place during the time of the judges, and you can see from the genealogies that are given at the end of the book of Ruth that the time span of the judges was probably about 200 years. 200 years from the time they came into the promised land being led by Joshua and until the first king, King Saul. It was a time of turmoil. It was they were up and down. They were hot sometimes. They were cold sometimes as far as their relationship with God. And the story takes place between Bethlehem and Moab. Moab being one of the countries that they did not conquer on the east side of the Jordan River. And there, Israel's relationship with Moab was kind of hot and cold as well. Sometimes they were on halfway peaceable terms, and sometimes they were at war with one another. They tend to take advantage of one another at any time that they could. Book of Ruth, the first chapter, verse 1 says, "Now it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons." Now let's stop there just for a minute. We see that there's a famine in Bethlehem. And this man that lives in Bethlehem decides, apparently because of the famine, to leave Bethlehem and leave Judah and go to Moab. Now, if you were, you see the title I've got for the message, "Feeling Empty in the Fullness of God's Providence." Now, if we were to, and this man's name was Elimelech, we'll see in the next verse or two, but if you were to have met Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons as they were leaving Judah, if you were to have met them at the border between Judah and Moab, and you were to have taken an exit poll, you were, Geraldo may have been there, and he may have stuck the microphone in Elimelech's face and said, "Elimelech, how do you feel? Why are you leaving Judah and going to Moab?" Now he's asking Elimelech, the man, so I want you men to give me some answers. Not the ladies, we'll get you in just a minute. But he asked Elimelech, "Elimelech, why are you leaving Judah?" What would his answer have been? "So I can take care of my family. I'm hungry." What else? "How do you feel, Elimelech?" You think of any other adjectives to describe that? Dejected. Depressed. "I'm broke, scared, I want a better life for myself and my family, that's why I'm leaving." Now if we were to stick the microphone in Naomi's face and say, "Naomi, how do you feel about all this? You ladies give me some answers." How would Naomi have felt? "I hope we're doing the right thing." Was his idea, right? What else? "How do you feel, Naomi?" "Like a pack horse." Okay. "Scared?" She feels scared as well. "Uncertain, insecure, wondering how this is going to turn out." Let's use, go ahead, Brian. Something new? Yeah, at least that's why you're going. You're hoping things are going to be better, right? Okay. All right, so they're leaving, and I'm going to use this one word to encompass all of those things. Empty. A feeling of emptiness. And we use that word a little different the way I want to use it this morning, but feeling like you've had the rug jerked out from under you. Feeling like things are not working out, and just suddenly it's one bad thing after another that happens, and you feel empty. I think there's some type of feeling of that regard, that things are not going well, that they are experiencing. That's verse 1. Verse 2, and the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. So we see the man is Elimelech, his wife is Naomi. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They are of the tribe of Ephraim. They are Ephrathites. They are of the tribe of Ephraim and were living in Bethlehem. Verse 3, then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her two sons. And they took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Now let's stop just for a second. Most commentators who would write on this account tend to give Elimelech down the road for leaving Judah to start with. Most of them would say that he should have never left Judah. God had given them commandments and told them not to do that. And they should have stayed where they were at. They were not to intermarry with the Moabite women. And if we give Elimelech and his family a little too much grief there, if we're going to be consistent, we've got to answer the question, what about Boaz when he ends up marrying this Moabite woman? So this morning, I'm not going to be too hard on Elimelech, because I can remember when I was young and freshly married and had a desire to live for the Lord and to walk with God. And I kind of had this idea that if I devoted myself to Jesus Christ and to walking with God, that things were going to be rosy, that things were going to be good, and things were going to just fall into place. And everything was going to be just well and good. And that hasn't been the case. And I am sure that part of the reason it has not been the case has been failure on my part to not be as righteous as I could have been, to not have made as good decisions as I could have been. But part of it is just, that's just the way life is. Sometimes the rug is just seemingly jerked out from under us. And that's the way we live. And I can't fault Elimelech for having some tough choices to make. We all have had them ourselves. So we go on. They lived there 10 years. Verse 5, then both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people. That would be her people back in Judah. God had visited the Israelites in giving them food. In other words, the famine was over, that the crops were again giving food. So verse 7, so she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughter-in-laws with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, Go return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. So they headed on their way back, and at some point Naomi stops and says, listen, Orpah and Ruth, why don't you just go back to your home? Go back to your mother's house, go back to your mom and dad's place and live there. You've been good to me. You've been nice and dealt kindly with my sons. But why don't you just go on back home, and I'll go back to Israel, and we'll just go on with our life. Verse 9, may the Lord grant you that you may find rest each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said unto her, no, but we will surely return with you to your people. But Naomi said, verse 11, return, my daughters, why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Now let's remind ourselves of what's going on here. It was the custom in Israel, if a man married a woman and he died without having any children, that if it were possible that things were worked out as such, that his widow would marry his brother. If he had a brother that was not married, he would marry his brother and have children in his name, you might say. Well, Naomi is here. She's had two sons. They were both married. They both died. And the two widows, Orpah and Ruth, do not have any more. They do not have any more sons or brothers that they might would have prospects of marrying. And that's what Naomi is talking about here. She says, do I have sons yet in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, verse 12, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they are grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? In other words, even if I could get married tonight, and even if I could conceive tonight and become pregnant, would you wait the 9 months that it takes for the child to be born, and then would you wait the next 20 years for the child to grow up and to be old enough to marry? It doesn't sound reasonable. It doesn't sound like a good option. You go back to your house and I'll go on. No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. Verse 14, and they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And here we see that Orpah does indeed turn back and go back. Verse 15, then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Verse 16, but Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. And here, this verse is a very familiar verse to us, I'm sure. Verse 16, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. Now that's where we're going to stop this morning, but I want to read two or three more verses just for to point out one thing. Verse 18, when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. So they both went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came about when they came to Bethlehem that all the city was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Now here's the phrase I want you to look at. Verse 21. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. I would have thought that, and we talked just a few minutes ago about how they felt as they went out. They went out feeling empty. But now 10 to 15 years has passed by and Naomi's perspective has changed. She now says she went out that 10 or 15 years ago, not empty, but full. What's the difference? The things that happened really in the time period, right? We're going to talk this morning about feeling empty in the fullness of God's providence. You see five or six things there on the outline. Let's begin with them. Number one, sometimes we are not to blame for our emptiness. Sometimes it's not our fault. There was a famine in the land. There was nothing Elimelech could have done about the famine. He couldn't have prevented it from happening. There was nothing he could do. It was not his fault. He was not to blame for this emptiness that came upon him. Everybody in Judah was in the same boat. Everyone was in the same situation. Everybody was in the same boat. Everyone was experiencing the famine just as he was. Number two, sometimes our emptiness involves fewer and undesirable choices. Sometimes in our emptiness, part of what happens there is that our options shrink. We don't have as many choices as we used to have. Friday, Susan and I went to North Little Rock, and we're on our way back a little after lunch, or right at lunchtime. And there's a fried pie shop at Jacksonville there, and Susan's wanting to stop at the fried pie shop. So I had to stop with her, right? So we go in the fried pie shop, and we get something to eat, order something to eat, and order a fried pie to go with it, and we've got it ordered, and the man tells us it'll be so much money, I forgot what it was. And I pull out I've had my billfold out by then, looking in it, and I had $6. And it was more than $6. So I said, "You got any money?" She said, "I don't have any money." All of a sudden, my choices have shrunk. What am I going to do? And all this stuff goes through your mind just real fast. My most desirable choice would have been to pay with cash. I didn't have any cash. Another choice would have been to say, "Hey, just forget the order. We don't have the money. You haven't started making it yet. We'll just have to go on home." That would have been an option. But then I remembered, hey, I got a credit card. We never use our credit cards like that. So that's why I didn't think about it. I said, "Do you take credit cards?" He said, "Yeah, we take credit cards." So I paid for the meal with the credit card. Now, suppose that I use a credit card this way, and this happens all the time. Suppose that the next week or so, I get my electric bill, and I don't have the money to pay my electric bill. And I don't foresee getting any money. It's not going to get it. The electric bill is due now. So I put my electric bill, pay for it, on my credit card. Let's say it's $200. And then I need some gas in my truck. I don't have any money. My options are very few. So I put my gas in my truck on my credit card. And by the end of the month, I have $500 or $600 put on this credit card. And then, around the first of the next month, I get my statement from my credit card bill. And it's $500 or $600, and the minimum payment is, say, $50. And I don't have any money. Ordinarily, on that particular credit card, anything we use it for, we pay it off every month. Keep it paid off, so just the way we do it. But I don't have any money. So I make the $50 minimum payment. Well, a week later, I've got another electric bill. You see where this is headed? It sound like the government? Things are going downhill fast. And Elimelech perhaps has felt that way in Judah. Elimelech felt like, hey, I've got two choices. I can either starve or I can move. Now maybe he had other choices, but it appears, and perhaps it appeared to Elimelech like those were his choices. Either we're fixing to starve to death in this famine, or we're going to have to go somewhere else where we can try to make a living. Now we might look at Elimelech and say, Elimelech, you shouldn't have done that. You should have just trusted God. God would provide for you. You should not make a move like that strictly based on a financial decision. Have you ever done that? How many of you have ever taken a job in a different town or a different state that required you to move? Almost everybody. You've taken a job in a different town or a different state where it required you to pack up and move. Almost all of us have. Now don't show me your hands, but how many of you, before you took the job, went to that town and checked out the spiritual needs that you may have? How many of you went there first and checked out the churches to see if there was a church there that would meet your needs? To see if there was a Christian community there that would support you? I bet there's not very many. We take the job, we make the decision based on finances. It's a better job, it's a step up, and assuming that once we get there, that we'll figure all that other stuff out. That's not a whole lot different than Elimelech. Sometimes in our emptiness, it seems like we don't have many choices. And the choices we're left with are undesirable. They're not really what we want. Number three, sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. They've left a famine, trying to make for themselves a better life, and then Naomi's husband dies. Her sons marry. They're there 10 years or so, and then her sons die. Things have gone from bad to worse. Now let me make a statement here. Sometimes when we make decisions, and we're trying to decide what to do, it may be a decision to move, it may be a decision to do this or to do that, and we make the decision, and then shortly afterwards, things fall apart, it doesn't work out. What do we tend to think, especially if we're seeing that happen to somebody else? I knew they shouldn't have done that, right? Or maybe one spouse to another, why did you get us into this mess? I didn't want to do this to start with. Listen to me. Bad things getting worse, when things go from bad to worse, that is not necessarily a sign of a wrong decision. It's just not. It's not necessarily a sign of God's judgment. It's not. When things go from bad to worse, it is just a sign that they've gone from bad to worse. it very well may be that God may lead you into a storm. That for God's own purposes, He may put you in a place where things are not good, where things are not lovely, where there's a famine in the land, where there's tragedy. Number four, being empty doesn't mean that you can't be used by God. I want to stop on this one just for a minute because Naomi tends to get a bad rap. Naomi tends to be pictured as a whiner, as somebody who sees the glass half empty rather than half full, as a pessimist, as someone who complains about her lot in life. We saw, and Marshall will talk about this next week, don't call me Naomi, just call me Mara. Nobody has it as bad as I've got it. Things are just awful, and we tend to look at Naomi in that light. But I want you to look at what you see in Naomi's relationship with her daughters-in-law. She rises up that she might return from Moab to Judah because she's heard God that the famine is over and God's blessing His people. So she decides to move back. And who is ready and eager to go with her? Her daughters-in-law. Do they have to do that? I don't think so. Do you know what might await them in Judah? You think it will be a happy welcome that she will get from the Israelites, being a Moabitess? I don't think so. Why is it that they are willing to go with her? I think it's because of their relationship that they have with her. I think that there is a great love and a great bond between these three women that caused these two girls, these two young women, to want to go with her. Have you ever heard someone classified as being high maintenance? I tell you, that's a yes. We might say that person is high maintenance. What do we mean by that? It's all about me. Okay? When I'm around someone that's high maintenance, I'm looking for a way out. I'm looking for the door. I say that slightly, with slight exaggeration, I guess. But they just wear me out. I'm just mentally exhausted if I'm around them just for a long period of time. You know, all of us, I think, face times in our lives when we are high maintenance. When there are things going on in our life that we require other people to minister to us. But we don't have to live there. We don't have to stay that way. Naomi probably had an excuse to be high maintenance if she'd wanted to be. And I would imagine that if she had have been, her daughter-in-laws would have said, "See you, Naomi. You go back to Judah, we'll stay here." But they don't. They want to go with her. They want to stay with her. Number five. Sometimes feeling empty keeps you from taking risk and making yourself vulnerable. Why is it that you think Naomi doesn't want her daughter-in-laws to go back with her? Someone has suggested that Naomi doesn't want her daughter-in-laws to go back because she knows that once she gets to Judah, once she gets to Israel, that her people are going to see these two women and say, "Who are these people, Naomi? Who are these two ladies?" "Well, this is Orpah and this is Ruth. They were my son's wives." "Oh, Are they Moabite women, Ruth or Naomi? Well, yes, they are. Oh, so your sons married Moabite women. And she's afraid her people will, or the idea is she's afraid her people will look down their pious nose at her and think bad of her because her sons married these Moabite women. And so she's embarrassed. She feels the shame of that. So she tries to get Orpah and Ruth to stay behind. Okay, I don't think that's what the deal is. I don't think that's what it is at all. I think Naomi knows that when she gets to Israel, that Orpah and Ruth are going to have a hard row to hoe. They are going to be viewed with suspicion and disdain, probably by the Israelite people, because they are Moabite. And she perhaps is trying to save them the hassle. And Naomi is not willing at this point to make herself vulnerable and take that risk and shoulder that burden with these two women. And she tries to make not just her own life easier, but these two women's lives easier too. You'll have a better chance of finding another husband if you stay back here in Moab where your people are. Your chances and the outlook for your life is not good anyway. But the chances perhaps are better here than if you were to come with me to Israel. And then number six. Very often, it takes hindsight just to see how full our basket was. You men ever go to the grocery store with your wife? Every once in a while, Susan will trick me into going to the grocery store with her. I'll find myself there, and I always got to push the buggy. About once or twice a year, we'll go to Sam's. And if we're going to go to Sam's, we're going to make it worth our while. So I get one of them flat carts, you know. Takes about a half acre to turn that thing, you know, especially when it gets loaded down with groceries. Need a CDL to drive the thing. But we'll go through the store. We may be at Sam's an hour going through there, and, you know, she'll say, this is a good buy right here, so she'll get four or five of them. And I'll say, if it's a good buy, let's get 15 up. So we're loading up, and, you know, I've got time. You know, we're going through there, and we're spending about an hour, so I've got a time to take all this stuff and organize it on this flat cart, where it can hold more and not want to fall off, and things will be stacked on there just right. And by the time we get to the checkout counter, it's full. Our buggy is full. Our basket is full. And we get up there, and the girl that's wanting to check you out, she doesn't want you to help her, apparently, you know. And she's got another empty cart over there, and I'm frustrated, because I know she is not going to be able to get all this stuff that I've got so meticulously arranged on my buggy, on that buggy. She's scanning that stuff and setting it over there, you know, like this. And so I said, it's not going to hold it all. We're going to have to carry two buggies out to the car. Having our basket full. Naomi, I think, is in a situation like this. She's going back to Israel. And now she's thinking, I went out full, I'm coming back empty. God's hand has been against me. I'm empty. I am really empty. And sometimes we look at our life that way, and sometimes it takes years to go by before we can look back at our life and say, no, my basket was full. All along, my basket was full. I want you to look at what Naomi has. She's got a young woman following her. And the young woman says, Naomi, don't ask me to leave you. Naomi, don't ask me to turn back from following you. Do you have someone in your life like that? You know, there are times when I have, I guess what really is a pity party. There are times when I feel like just forgetting it. There are times when I feel like just finding a church that's got 700 to 1,000 people in it where I can just go and blend in with the crowd and never be known. Never nobody mess with me. Just blend in. And just forget all the other stuff. You know, go on Sunday morning and blend in with the crowd and come out, you know, be kind of late getting there so I don't have to shake anybody's hand. And as soon as it's over, make a beeline for the door so I don't have to talk to anybody and kind of soothe my conscience that I went to church that day and go on. You know, if I did that, you know what would happen? There's at least two or three of you guys who'd be knocking on my door. You'd be wanting to know what's going on. What is wrong? What is going on with you? And I could tell you to leave me alone, and I think that you would, I'd have to get extremely rude and nasty with you before you would. I think you would say, listen, don't ask me to leave. Don't tell me nothing's wrong. I want to know what's happening. What's going on in your life that you've come to this place of just throwing in the towel and forgetting. I need somebody like that. And the fact that God has given me people like that is filling my basket. Naomi has a woman like that. Ruth has said, Naomi, don't ask me to leave. Don't ask me to turn around and stop following you. I'm not going to do it. Wherever you go, that's where I'm going to go. Wherever you lodge, that's where I'm going to lodge. Your people will be my people. Now that's a big one. Your people may look down on me because I'm a Moabitess. I may never be able to find a man from Israel who will marry me because of the situation I am in, because of the circumstances in my life. Your people may look down on me and I may never have an opportunity to remarry. That may be what your people are like, but Naomi, your people will be mine. They will be my people. In spite of what may likely happen, your God will be my God. Your God that didn't keep the famine from entering the land of his people. Your God who took your husband's life. Your God who took both of your sons' lives and let them die. Your God who took my husband away. Your God will still be my God. Where you die, I will die. And that's where I will be buried. The last line, she says, may God do this and more to me. She is swearing an oath, calling upon God to verify and to hear what she had just said and to punish her by death if she does not do what she said. I swear it with God as my witness. I would say Naomi is going back pretty full. Naomi is going back with her basket pretty full. Does Naomi see that? Not yet. Not yet, she doesn't. But by the time we get to the end of the book of Ruth, we'll see her holding a babe in her lap. What do the women say? A son has come to Naomi. You know that son wasn't kin to her? No, not kin to her. Kin to her husband. Kin to her daughter-in-law. It's not kin to her. No blood kin to her at all. I wouldn't tell her that, though, would you? I don't think so. How would you apply what we've talked about? You know, I think that all of us ought to stop and just think about our lives. You might can even just, could sometimes just shut your eyes and picture yourself with a basket and thinking of the things that God has given you that makes your basket full. Put them in there. Put them in there. I want to ask, if I would, our worship team to come up. We're going to sing a song right after the message and then have our offering. As we pray, as they come up and as we pray, I want you to, if you would, just to think of how God has made you full. Even in the emptiness of your life, sometimes your life may seem empty, but yet it's full. Father, would you help us, God, not to focus our attentions on the catastrophes, not to focus our attention on what we don't have, but Father, to be reminded of what we do have. God, you have placed us together in this place. God, you have made my life full in different ways by everyone that I worship here with each Sunday. God, help us to be faithful to each other.